A leased time course would take, 3.5 months. The sites are scattered inconveniently. We have to make roundabout routes through wormholes to get to all 4 sites. Meh, I said, surprised. Huh? You said, meh. Like when something isn't bad, it isn't great, it's just, you know, meh. Oh, yeah. In this case, meh was me suppressing my instinct to be precise. I told you that the estimated transit time is 3.5 months, instead of me saying 3 months, 17 days, 10 hours, 21 minutes, and 48.267 seconds, roughly. Roughly? In the future, let's go with meh. I thought so. Also, that is average transit time, not including time to match course with the sites, fly down in dropships, explore the sites, all that. Kind of implied, Skippy. Yeah, you'd think so, but I'm trying to explain hyperspatial navigation to monkeys, so, got it. Not all monkeys aboard this ship are as dumb as me. None of them are, Joe. Well, I'm only considering standard IQ tests in the crew's personnel files, of course. Skippy paused. Oh. Did I just insult you? You think? Hey, blame the facts, not the messenger. Besides, I've told you before that the standard IQ tests of your species are woefully inadequate predictors of ability to create innovative solutions to... Christ, Skippy, you sound like the buzzwords on those stupid PowerPoint slides that I'm supposed to study. Sorry? To dumb it down for you, he said, while supposedly intending not to insult me. Somehow your tiny monkey brain is able to think of things that my godlike intelligence misses. Like when you had the idea to get rid of the Krestang ships by jumping them into a gas giant. Or when you asked me how Theranin fought in their flimsy spacesuits because it didn't occur to me to tell you about their combats. None of your original merry band of pirates, who mostly had higher IQs than you, had those ideas. Joe, you may not be particularly smart in a conventional sense, but you apparently have a talent that is more useful in your current role. You are clever. Spacesuits. Darn it! You had to remind me. Yes, I hate to say it, but that is a good example. I was damn proud of myself. As a senior officer, I may be grossly inadequate for my responsibilities according to the United States Army. As an infantry soldier, I had, in my humble opinion, good common sense, including the ability to ask obvious questions that everyone else was missing. Believe me, patrolling the Nigerian jungle in full battle rattle on ill-defined missions had caused me to ask a whole lot of common-sense questions. Thank you, Skippy. You can program us a course for the closest site? Already loaded into the nav system. Of course it is. Great. I'll tell the pilots. And the entire crew. No one had been looking forward to a lonely, dull 14-month voyage to explore the dangerous second site. Sitting in the command chair on the bridge, I was waiting for the jump engines to recharge. We had changed course to check out the closest of the sites where Skippy thought we might find an Elder facility that wasn't known to the Theranin or Jirapatha. I didn't have much to do, and my mind wandered. Skippy, something has been puzzling me. He made an exaggerated sigh. Darn it. I knew this was going to happen sooner or later. All right, fine. Joey, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much... I know about the birds and the bees, Skippy. Damn it. I should have known better than to try asking Skippy a serious question while other people were around. In the CIC, I could see people smirking, and one of the pilot's shoulders was shaking as he laughed. At me. Boy, that is a relief. The last thing I want to explain is monkey mating rituals. You're puzzled. Is this about shoe tying again? I think you'd be best to stick to Velcro until... You know why I need shoes? Because I can walk. Let's see you do that, beer can. Whoa, that's the best you've got. Pretty lame there, Joey. I'm trying to be serious here, Skippy. Another sigh. Fair enough. You do understand how difficult it is for me to take anything you monkeys say seriously, right? What is your question? If it's not outrageously stupid, I will consider wasting my time on you. We lowly, unworthy monkeys would greatly appreciate it. My question is about stealth technology. I've heard you say this ship has a stealth field, and I've seen you detect other ships soon after we jump into an area. Don't those ships also have stealth? And how does a stealth field work? We have stealth jets on Earth. Wow. Man, There isn't enough aspirin in the galaxy to fix the headache I'm going to get while trying to explain this to you. Fine. Listen hard, Mr. Big Stupid Head. You might learn something. No, you do not have stealth jets on Earth. You have laughably crude pieces of metal that try to bounce radar waves in a different direction instead of back to the radar receiver. Or you have coatings painted on your jets that try to absorb radar waves. That type of coating doesn't work so well when it's wet or dirty, by the way. And good luck to your Navy, trying to maintain delicate stealth coatings on aircraft in a corrosive salt spray environment. No, you do not have stealth technology. Your species has glanced the basic mechanics of stealth technology. You haven't been able to make it work yet. Fine. What's the difference? A stealth field bends light waves around a ship. When a stealth field is working optimally, light flows right around an object as if it wasn't there. If a ship using stealth is between you and a star, all you will see is light from the star. The stealthed ship won't cast a shadow. Cool. Is that why sometimes Ruhar or Kristang aircraft have a fuzzy outline? They're hard to see? Yes, exactly. Although using stealth in an atmosphere is almost not worth doing. Any decent set of sensors can track how an aircraft disturbs the air around it, and the engines emit a heat signature that a blind man could see from 100 miles. There is an important drawback to a stealth field. Can you guess what it is? Skippy played the annoying theme music from Jeopardy while I thought furiously, trying to impress him with my monkey smarts. Light bent around the ship. Radar waves bent around the ship. Light. Hey, if all the light bends around the ship, how can the ship see anything? It would be blind, right? Bing, 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 we have a winner. That was pretty good, Joe. Yep. All light bends around the stealth ship. A ship inside a stealth field might actually fly into or too close to a star because the light from the star wouldn't contact the ship's sensors. Don't worry. A stealth field has intentional gaps that allow in enough light for detection. I looked at the display. Huh. That's how we can still use the sensors when we're stealthed. Cool. But other ships use stealth, right? And you're able to detect them. Is that more amazing Skippy magic? Skippy snorted. Amazing magic to monkeys, sure. The answer is no. I make our sensors significantly more effective. However, the technology for active scanning is used by all star-faring species, even dum-dum lizards. Ships use an active sensor field projected from the ship to detect objects around them. Wait just a minute. That doesn't make sense. Why would a ship in stealth that is trying to hide project something that gives away their position? Missiles could home in on the source of that field and blow up the ship. Figuring that out made me feel pretty darn smart. My Uncle Bob has a friend in the Navy on a nuclear submarine, and one time at a cookout in my uncle's backyard, I listened in while the guy talked about what it's like to be in a steel tube under the waves. One thing he said is that real subs almost never use their active sonar, sending out a sonar pulse ping and listening for it bounce back. The whole point of a submarine is that it's quiet and it's underwater and nobody knows where it is. Sending out a sonar pulse is like shouting, "Hey, look at me, I'm a dumbass, here I am." Using active sonar invites a torpedo to follow the sonar waves back to the source and sink the sub. "The sensor field isn't spherical, you dope," Skippy explained. "It has an irregular shape and it constantly changes shape, and the field intensity varies throughout it. The field isn't strongest closer to the ship. To find the source of the field, a missile would need to first map the shape of the field and calculate where it must be projected from. That would take way too long, and the field shape is constantly changing. There is no practical way to map it. When an object enters a ship's sensor field range, even if that object is stealthed, it will change the field shape. That data feeds back to the source ship. Because the source ship knows what the shape and local density of the sensor field is supposed to be at any time, it can tell what object distorted the field, where the object is, how fast it is moving, and in what direction, and outline of the object, all that. It gets complicated during combat, of course, because ships try to distort other ships' sensor fields in ways that mask who and where they truly are. Ships can even project sensor ghosts, distort or jam a sensor field, and create a false reading. The big limitation to sensor fields at this level of technology is that they propagate at the speed of light, so they are painfully slow by the standards of space combat. By the time an object is detected and that data gets back to the source ship, the object will have moved in an unpredictable fashion. That makes long-range targeting difficult, even with speed-of-light weapons. You fire a maser or particle beam, and by the time the beam gets there, the target has moved. Oh, wow. A ship can dodge a maser beam. Cool. Oh, indeed. Are we done with kindergarten for the day? If you're good and take a nap now, I'll get you a juice box. Ivey, I've got a headache. I need to lay down with a cold compress on my forehead. No juice box needed. Could you do one more thing for me? Explain all that to our science team? Science team? You are referring to the group of marginally smarter monkeys. Ugh, then my head would explode. Tell you what, I just forwarded a video recording of our conversation to their Z-phones. They can watch it and save me from having to explain it all over again. Great. Thank you, Skippy. Don't mention it. Seriously, please, do not ever mention this again. Having gotten Skippy to smack some knowledge down on me, I was feeling pretty good about myself. This lasted less than 3 minutes. Skippy, true to his word, had forwarded a video of a conversation to the science team and to everyone else on the ship. That was great. What was not so great, that shithead little beer can had replaced my image in the video with a chimpanzee. Instead of me sitting in the command chair, it was a chimp with my voice coming out of its mouth. And not just sitting in the chair. This chimp is swinging around the bridge, eating bananas, scratching itself, playing with its private parts, hooting and bouncing around the bridge and other embarrassing things. My first notice that something had gone horribly wrong was when people in the CIC began laughing uncontrollably while looking at their Z-phones. Oy vey, now I had a headache. Chapter 6. Before we made the final jump to recon our first target of Skippy's list of potential Elder sites, I wanted to speak to the crew. The entire crew. No chimp this time, Skippy, okay? No replacing my image with a monkey, no matter what you think of us. Agreed, Joe, that was only funny one time. Thank you. It was a short speech, nothing inspirational. Simply reminding everyone that we're about to jump into a star system that we, even Skippy, knew little about, and that we might be jumping away with no notice to the crew. The pilots had orders to initiate a short emergency jump on their own judgment without waiting for the officer on duty in the bridge. It was a simple talk to the crew, that I did not intend to be anything memorable, but Skippy had other ideas. I learned almost immediately what he had done after clicking the intercom button off. I learned about it when Sergeant Adams forwarded a video recording of my speech to my Z-phone. Crap. On the video feed to the rest of the ship, Skippy had replaced my image and voice with Barney. Barney, the big stupid purple dinosaur. He hadn't only altered my voice, he'd changed some of my words. My speech didn't begin with, "This is Colonel Bishop." It began with,
"Duh, hello, boys and girls,"
in classic moronic Barney tones. There I was, a big idiotic dinosaur, sitting in the command chair in my uniform, talking like I had an IQ of 30. Damn it, I hate that smug little beer can. On the other hand, everyone got a good laugh at my expense, so it was good for crew morale. All right," I said with as much good nature as I could muster. "Let's focus, people. We have a jump in 20 minutes." I took a quick bathroom break and used it as an opportunity to speak with Skippy in private. Skippy, about that Barney video?
Funny, huh? The crew loved it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, there were other characters painted on the side of that ice cream truck. Why don't you show me as Iron Man or...
The Smurfs.
I'd forgotten about the Smurfs. Not the Smurf. The only one people remember is Barney. All right. I was tired of fighting about it. Fine, Barney. This is another case where it's only funny once, you understand that, right?
You sure about that?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Crap, I thought. What did you do, Skippy?
I can neither confirm or deny, but somebody, whose name rhymes with, let's say, Stippy, may have left behind a virus that altered your image on all the video recordings of your intelligence debriefings in Colorado Springs. That virus may have taken effect after we left Earth.
Great. Just great. Some guy named Stippy, huh?
Yep. You should never trust him. That guy's a real asshole.
The jump in was uneventful. Skippy declared within 5 minutes that we were alone in the star system. 15 minutes later, the crew monitoring sensors in the Combat Information Center agreed, and I ordered the ship to stand down from battle stations. Then we began the painstaking process of searching for an Elder site. The star system, centered on an unremarkable red dwarf star, had one smallish gas giant planet, about the size of Neptune. Skippy thought the most likely place for the Elders to have located a facility was on a rocky moon orbiting the gas giant. Quickly, the ship's sensors identified 3 large and 2 small rocky moons, plus 2 more that were covered in ice. Skippy warned that locating an Elder site could take considerable time, as the Elders may have partially hidden it, and most of the facility could be buried deep under the surface. He was wrong.
"Ah, damn it. Found it," he announced, sounding disgusted.
"It's on the 2nd largest moon on top of a plateau. Whatever its purpose, the Elders didn't make any attempt to hide it, and somebody has already been there. There's debris scattered around the site, and the surface is disturbed from where dropships landed.
Crap! We are way too late.
Some hooligans already ransacked the place."
Hooligans? I wondered where Skippy picked up his slang.
"Sorry, Skippy, but hey, this is not a failure. I think this is great. We proved your model for locating unmapped Elder sites is correct, and we didn't encounter any hostiles when we jumped in or take a risk checking the place out. This is the first place we've looked. Did you really think we'd hit the jackpot the very first time?"
"It would have been nice," he grumbled, then sighed.
I wondered how Skippy decided when to fake a sigh, since he didn't actually breathe. "You're right. You're right. This does prove I know how to locate Elder sites that are not known to the Theranin or the Giraptha, or at least not in databases I have access to. Anything useful was probably taken from this site a long, long time ago."
"Joe, when you've been waiting as long as I have, it is frustrating to get all the way there and find some jerk has looted the place. Is it worth going down there anyway to check it out?"
With this star system apparently uninhabited, I wanted to take advantage of an excellent opportunity for training. Our pilots could practice flying dropships down to the surface of the moon and back, and soldiers could gain experience using suits on the moon in low gravity. Partly because I felt bad about denying the science team more time at the abandoned space station, I wanted the science team to also be able to get away from the ship, go down to the moon, and poke around in an Elder site. Even if the site had, as Skippy feared, been stripped down of anything valuable, the science team could learn what an Elder site looked like. They could get used to it, so if we found an unmolested site, the team would not waste time with sightseeing and marveling at the novelty of it.
"Sure. What the hell? Why not?
It's possible that the hooligans who vandalized the place were only looking for weapons or something they could sell to buy drugs," he said bitterly. "They might not have recognized a comm node as anything valuable. It would be good for you monkeys to get the sightseeing over with here anyway. When we do find a site that hasn't been screwed with, I don't want to waste time with you monkeys taking selfies and stupid crap like that."
"My thoughts exactly, Skippy," I agreed.
"Colonel Chang," I turned the chair to look into the CIC. "How about you take the Chinese team and the Indians?" Those two teams were currently at the top of a randomly chosen rotation. "And a scientist down there. Recon the site, see if the looters left anything useful. If not, we at least gain experience using suits on the surface of an airless world."
"Yes, sir," he responded eagerly.
"Captain Desai," I turned back to face the front of the bridge compartment. "If flying a mere dropship is not too boring compared to a starship, would you like to ferry Colonel Chang's team down for some sightseeing?"
"Oh, I think I can manage it, sir," she said with a wide grin, sliding out of the pilot couch.
Desai set the dropship down carefully, 1/2 kilometer from the largest building of the Elder site, and Chang took first 3 people over to the site, then called in others. It wasn't easy for me to resist the temptation to micromanage the landing party from orbit, so I pretended to be more calm than I felt and went to my office so Major Sims could have more time in the command chair and to let Chang and Desai make decisions on their own. After an hour, I couldn't stand it any longer and returned to the bridge. Sims stepped back to her duty station in the CIC.
Right away, I noticed something odd on the main bridge display. A sensor analysis that depicted the gas giant planet was surrounded by a loose cloud.
Major Sims, what is that?
We have been practicing using the sensors, sir. Skippy wanted sensors to scan the orbit around the planet. We've been trying to see if we can get the same readings from the data as he does. There is some kind of atmospheric gas surrounding the planet.
Good idea, I said. We shouldn't rely on Skippy for everything. What is so interesting about this space gas, Skippy?
Joe, I found something odd, Skippy said in a voice that I associated with my high school science teacher. There is a measurable part of the planet's atmosphere in orbit.
You mean higher than it should be?
Yes. These gases are not technically part of the atmosphere now. From the ratio of elements and the orbiting gases, I can tell they came from the planet. They aren't something ejected by volcanic eruption on one of the moons.
Except, that is odd.
What? Truthfully, right then, I did not much care what scientific oddity Skippy had discovered about a small gas giant planet orbiting a dull red dwarf star a long way from Earth. On the other hand, I did not want to insult Skippy by being openly disinterested.
What's odd about it?
The chemical elements that are missing.
Can you be more specific? Trying to feign interest, I was about to suggest that he discuss this with the science team rather than me.
This planet is missing some type of gas that,
gas giants normally have.
In a flash of insight, I asked, is that because this planet is small for a gas giant?
Hey, is there a special name for a gas planet that isn't a giant? Do we call it a gas normal? Something like that?
We don't.
If the planet was much smaller, it couldn't be made of gas, right? The gravity would be too low to contain the gas, and it would escape into space, be boiled off by the solar wind?
Man, I was proud of myself for thinking that on my own.
I remembered reading that the reason the atmosphere of Mars was so thin was that most of it had been blown away by the sun's solar wind over millions of years because Mars doesn't have a magnetic field.
Yes, that is both correct and irrelevant to the current situation, he said. This planet has a normal distribution of gases for a planet of this size, considering the gaseous composition of its star. I was about to tell you about the odd part, before you sidetracked me with your moronic speculation on a subject you know zero about. There are gases present in the planet's atmosphere that are almost entirely missing from the cloud of gases enveloping the planet in low orbit. For example, and most telling, there is no helium-3 in the gas cloud.
Moronic.
Now I was insulted, and figured this was a challenge.
Well, some elements are lighter, and so those would have been pushed out of orbit by the solar wind here, and the heavy gases would have fallen back into the atmosphere.
Joe?
Yes?
Here's a quote I read once from a smart monkey. It is better to remain silent and be thought an idiot than to speak and remove all doubt.
Oh, that's hilarious, you shithead.
Me, a shithead? You've been giving me guesses that are about on the level of astrology in terms of scientific relevance. If you will please shut your pie hole for a moment, I will smack some actual useful knowledge on you. Knowledge that you should be interested to hear because it represents a potential threat to the ship. You need that knowledge as the commander of this mission. And man, every time you open your mouth, I realize what a gargantuan mistake that was to put you in command of anything more important than a lemonade stand.
Shutting up now, I said in all seriousness.
Great. Finally. Planets that are surrounded by an orbiting mixture of atmospheric gases are not unusual. I have seen them many times before. It is not the fact that this planet is surrounded by escaped gases that is interesting. What is interesting is why those gases are likely there.
My guess, and when I make a guess, it is based on solid data and rational analysis, unlike the idiotic BS that comes out of your mouth. My guess is that those gases are in orbit because they are pulled up in the process of ships extracting useful gases from the atmosphere. Starships use gas giant planets as a supply of elements for fuel, reaction mass, and other purposes, depending on the technology of the ships involved.
Holy crap, I gasped.
You're telling me this damn planet is a gas station?
Sort of, yes. Not the sort of gas station that has a convenience store where you can buy Slurpees and week-old hot dogs. Maybe it is more of an inconvenience store where you have to make everything from the basic elements. But yes,
The sensor data points to this planet having been used to extract starship fuel in the past.
Past like yesterday or like a million years ago? I asked anxiously. To Skippy, who had existed possibly for millions of years, time had a totally different meaning than it did for modern-day humans, who measured time mostly in terms of TV show seasons.
That is difficult to tell, even for me, Joe. We don't have enough long-term data about this star system for me to accurately forecast timelines.
Well, give me a wild guess. Was it more or less than 1,000 years ago?
Oh, in that case, less. Not yesterday, either. Maybe within the last year.
Or... I'm running an extrapolation here. Maybe more like within the last month, based on disbursement of the waste gases.
Possibly less than a month. There is a whole lot of waste gas in orbit here. And while this particular star is nothing special, it is conveniently located between two wormhole clusters. So it is a particularly good candidate to be a frequently used refueling stop.
Do we need to get out of here immediately or not?
That, Joe, is a judgment call you need to make.
Crap.
All decisions ultimately fell to the commander.
Damn it. Major Sims, recall the landing party, right now. Get them back to the dropship and off the surface as soon as possible, and tell them I do not care what interesting sciencey stuff they are doing down there. Pilot, Skippy, I need jump options to get the Dutchman out of here if needed.
Through the glass wall, I could see Sims talking into a microphone. She was shaking her head. Then she looked at me.
Sir, Captain Desai reports that her dropship is 40 kilometers from the main site. She landed there so four people could check out some outbuildings. She has recalled the second landing party and estimates she can retrieve those people and be headed back to the main site in 25 minutes. Colonel Chang told her it will take 40 minutes for his team to reach the evac site. He has some people down in an access shaft far beneath the surface. They think they may have found a section of the base that has not been looted.
Damn it. While I commend Chang's initiative, his timing is less than optimal.
All right. Signal Desai and Chang to move as quickly as they can do so safely. I don't want someone getting into an accident and this becoming a rescue operation.
Yes, sir, Sims acknowledged.
Adams stepped around the corner from the CIC to talk with me.
We're bugging out of this system already, sir?
What she didn't say, and I could see in her eyes, was that here we had a confirmed Elder site, which we had not fully explored, and that perhaps we were being hasty about abandoning it just because of some gas floating above the planet. Another potential Elder site might not be any better, and we'd be wasting this opportunity.
No, we're not leaving. Not yet. What we are doing is picking up our landing party so they won't be left behind if we have to jump out of here. I let a large party go down there, partly to gain experience, on the assumption this star system was safe, uninhabited. Now we learn that this system might be a high-traffic area because the planet below us is a gas station. We're going to pull back and assess the data. If the risk looks manageable, we will figure out a better way to explore the site, with multiple options for quick evac. Looking back, it might have been foolhardy of me to use an Elder site as an opportunity to give people experience in armor suits on the surface of an airless moon. With both sides of the war dedicating ships to searching for Elder sites, I should have selected a less important place for training. What I should have done is ask Skippy to suggest a completely uninteresting star system and take the ship there for a dedicated week of training. Extending the mission by a week would be a small price to pay for having pilots with experience landing dropships and soldiers and scientists gaining experience walking around and working in Kristang spacesuits. Now, this situation needed to be added to my list of opportunities for me to learn from.
Adams nodded slowly, looking at me carefully. She still thought of me as a buck sergeant, and her instincts as an experienced staff sergeant were to offer me gentle, nudging guidance in what she considered the right direction. I knew what she was thinking. That I was so inexperienced as a commander, I was afraid to take even reasonable risks.
Yes, sir.
Maybe I was being hasty, too risk-averse. The four people in Desai's secondary landing party, who had been checking out structures away from the main Elder base, were almost back to the dropship. I was watching a video feed from the dropship. Four people, carefully loping across the rocky surface of the moon, kicking up puffs of dust as they walked, bouncing lightly. Damn, I envied them. Even though I had trained in a suit, trained in zero gravity, low gravity, high gravity, in vacuum, and simulated thick atmosphere, all the training had taken place aboard the Dutchman.
I wanted to walk on the surface of a real moon. I wanted to feel like an astronaut. There I was, commander of a starship, and at the moment, I envied three Indian soldiers and an Australian scientist who were striding confidently back to the...
Uh-oh. Joe, jump option Echo right now. Now, Skippy shouted.
I nodded to the pilot, and she pressed the proper button. In a flash, the Flying Dutchman moved. The image on the main bridge display changed from the surface of a moon to the cloud tops of the gas giant. Cloud tops, as in it looked like we could reach out and touch them.
Where are we? I asked, alarmed. What happened?
Don't worry, Joe. We're safely above the atmosphere, despite what it looks like. We jumped into an area with an intense magnetic field, and I've engaged stealth. Two Kristang ships jumped in near the planet. We were on the other side of the moon. I believe we jumped quickly enough that they did not detect the gamma ray signature of our jump out. We're now over the planet's horizon. That should have shielded our jump in from being seen also. The Kristang, overall, have crappy sensors on their ships. They have concentrated on upgrading weapons technology at the expense of sensors, which is a mistake the stupid lizards have been making for a very long time. They never learn.
Two more Kristang ships have jumped in.
Two. Three. Five more. That's seven Kristang ships. A typical task force.
What type of ships?
It looks like, I'm checking the data as it comes in, one battle cruiser, two cruisers, two destroyers, a troop transport, and a support ship.
Can they see us?
No way, Joe. Our Theranin stealth field, plus my own awesome enhancements, are quite effectively shielding us from the laughably useless sensors the lizards have. We are also encased in the planet's magnetic field, which distorts the sensor fields of the Kristang. So no, they do not know we are here.
What about the landing party? Have the Kristang seen them?
No, not that I am able to determine from Kristang ship-to-ship transmissions. The lizards do not appear to have any interest in the Elder Site. That confirms my suspicion that multiple species have picked over that site over many years. Just before we jumped, I signaled the landing party that enemy ships are in the system. Captain Desai will have detected their inbound jump signatures. I am sure she has engaged the dropship's stealth field and maintained communication security, and that Colonel Chang has concealed his team within the Elder facility. Our sensors are no longer able to detect the dropship, which leads me to believe it is effectively stealthed. Unless either Desai or Chang break discipline, something that would greatly surprise me, even given what little I know of them, the Kristang will not learn of their presence on the surface there.
Relieved for the moment, I took in a deep breath and let it out slowly, like a yoga thing, except that I'd never taken a yoga class. My sister had been big into yoga for a while.
Fine. Great. The critical factor, then, is how much oxygen does the landing party have?
There are two critical factors, Joe, he corrected me. How much oxygen the landing party has in their suits, and how long the Kristang intend to remain there. Assuming Colonel Chang orders the landing party to lay down, rest, and conserve oxygen, they should have enough in their suits for 32 hours. Considering that they will need to walk back out to the dropship, and during that time they will be increasing their oxygen usage, 30 hours is the practical limit. As for the Kristang, from their communications, I have determined they are in this system because they were dropped off by a Theranin star carrier that is going in a different direction, and they are waiting to be picked up by a different star carrier in 36 hours. The Kristang are here to practice fleet maneuvers and for a refueling exercise. The support ship is capable of extracting fuel from the atmosphere of a gas giant planet. Its tanks are now almost full, so it will not be going through the actual fuel extraction and refining entire process, which typically takes 6 to 8 days for the Kristang. For this exercise, the support ship will only practice lowering its refueling line into the atmosphere and maintaining a stable position in orbit. The other ships will be conducting war game exercises. I do not have the details, as they have not been included in ship-to-ship transmissions yet.
36 hours. That's too late. Wait. If they're going to be picked up by the Theranin, though, they'd want to be at the rendezvous point plenty ahead of time.
For our landing party, I wanted plenty of cushion on their oxygen supply.
Absolutely. The Theranin have zero patience for stragglers. Their star carriers do not wait for anyone, sometimes including other Theranin ships. They have been known to leave behind Kristang ships that have been as little as 10 minutes late to a rendezvous. I expect the Kristang will want to be certain to arrive at the rendezvous point at least 4 hours ahead of time, so they should depart here 10 or 12 hours ahead of time. I made a long, low whistle of dismay.
Whew,
That is cutting it very close. 30 hours of oxygen for the landing team, and the Kristang will be here for another 24 to 26 hours. The math is brutal, yes. Can we get a message to the landing party? Not from here at the moment. But in roughly 2 hours, we will be in position to send a tight beam burst transmission with minimal risk of detection by the Kristang. Unless, of course, there is a Kristang ship between us and the moon at the time.
We're going to wait, sir?
Sims asked skeptically. Skippy, what are our chances of taking on 7 Kristang ships? 5 warships, right? I asked hopefully. We don't count the troop transport or the support ship.
Do not ignore those 2 lesser combatants, Colonel Joe. They are equipped with missiles and masers, and 4 of the troop transport's dropships also carry missiles. The Kristang could hurt us badly in a fight. A star carrier's best defense is to run away.
I do not like the odds of us engaging 7 ships. There is also the problem that other Kristang ships, I do not yet have a count, are waiting at the edge of this star system. They could quickly be brought in as reinforcements.
This isn't a simple stand-up fight, I explained to Sims. We would be vulnerable while we're standing still to recover the landing party. And as soon as the Kristang see what we're doing, they for sure will target the landing party. We won't be able to protect them.
We wait. We send a signal to the landing party in about 2 hours, and we wait for the Kristang to go away.
It sucks, but that's what we do. We wait.
Chapter 7.
We waited. It did suck. Right at the 2-hour and 3-minute mark, we shot a communications maser toward the moon, advising the landing party about the situation, the rough timelines for us to recover them, and ordering them not risk sending a reply. Then we waited some more. A lot more. After my duty shift on the bridge was over, I surrendered the chair to Sergeant Adams. Part of me wanted to stay in the chair for the full 26 hours, to not miss a second while my crew stretched out their dwindling oxygen supply. The crew I had ordered to the surface and put in danger. The crew I was responsible for. Needing something to do, I went to the gym and ran on a treadmill, headphones on, and not in a mood for a chit-chat. Other people in the gym left me alone. Following an hour of sweating on the treadmill, I took a shower, got a snack from the galley, and went to my office. Skippy pinged me through my Z-phone. That meant he wanted to talk privately. Putting in my Z-phone earpiece, I said, "Hey, Skippy, more bad news?" Since news is by definition new information, there is no news. The situation has not changed. From the display on my tablet, I knew that already. It still felt good to have Skippy verify what I was seeing.
All right, what's up?
This is a conversation perhaps best conducted in private, Joe.
Ah, got it. I pinged the CIC crew to let them know I was going to my cabin. Once there, I closed the door behind me and sat down on the bed. The crew knew not to disturb me in my cabin without calling me first.
What is it?
Joe, I know this will not be a pleasant conversation.
Let me guess. You're going to tell me that I need to consider abandoning Chang's team in order to continue the mission?
Yes.
His voice carried genuine surprise. Sacrifice a few soldiers to preserve most of the crew and the ship.
Uh-huh, he said slowly.
I'm kind of at a loss for words here, Joe. I was prepared for a long argument, and now I got nothing.
Don't be an ass, Skippy. You think I haven't considered that I may have to do that? Sit here silently while the clock runs out on their oxygen supply and they choke to death?
I have considered that. I'm the commander. That means I have to put the mission first. It sucks. It absolutely sucks. I hate it. I'm the commander. It's my job.
You think about this. We're out here for you. That is your mission. We're risking our lives for you.
Whoa. That's BS. You're putting all the burden on me and you're wrong. Yeah, I need you not to risk the ship. You humans need to make sure other species do not discover that you are roaming around the galaxy.
Damn, I had actually hurt his feelings.
That came out kind of harsh, Skippy. I didn't mean it that way. You saved our planet, and we have a deal, and I'm going to keep that deal, even if it costs lives. I want you to understand that.
I do understand it, Joe.
Good.
I have thought about this a lot, Skippy. If we don't have a realistic chance to recover the landing party without undue risks to the ship,
then I am simply going to have to face the facts. It's plain and simple, Skippy. I can't afford to get emotional about command decisions. So yes, I have already decided we will abandon Chang's team if we have to. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. Joe, occasionally I am confronted with the fact that you are not only the good-natured dope who I joke around with. I am reminded that you shot down 2 whales in cold blood, killing almost 1,000 sentient beings, and that under your command we jumped 14 Kristang starships inside a planet, killing their entire crews. That doesn't include the 78th Theranin of their ship's original crew, or the Kristang who died when you nuked that asteroid. Your point is what? Occasionally I was reminded that Skippy was an AI built by civilization so far advanced they would consider humans to be bugs at best. He acted friendly to us, and we needed him to continue to be friendly. My most important job was not commanding the ship, not leading the crew, not making critical decisions. The most important thing I did aboard the Dutchman was making sure Skippy enjoyed having us around. If Skippy ever got bored with insulting me and busting my balls, we would be in trouble. Odd as it is to think about it, my relationship with that arrogant little shithead was humanity's greatest asset. My point, I guess, is that I came into this discussion assuming I needed to force you to consider an agonizing decision, and you had already done that. I underestimated you. Thank you, Skippy. Of course, most of the time, when I think I'm underestimating you, it turns out I estimated way too high because you're such a doofus. And thanks for reminding me what an asshole you really are. Oh, no problem, Joe. Anytime. Around 7 hours in, I was again in my office doing busy work that kept me from hovering around the bridge and distracting the duty crew. Skippy interrupted my thoughts with more bad news.
Joe, I just learned a possibly interesting tidbit about this task force. The commander is the third son of a high-tier clan leader. He took command of the task force only recently, and the fleet naturally gave him cast-offs from other task forces. As such, he jumped his task force in here for training exercises to whip his new ships into shape. He is very concerned that his task force will be embarrassed during a major clan-wide fleet war game that is scheduled for next month. With much of the next month taken up in travel time, this is his best opportunity for training.
Damn it, I cursed. That means he's going to push the time limit, stay here running exercises right to the deadline. That's what I said because that's what I would do if I was suddenly in command of a second-hand task force.
My thoughts exactly. There are other Kristang ships out at the edge of this star system. He took his task force here so they can train away from watching eyes. From what I have seen, the commander's fears about the ships he was given are entirely justified. These ships are poorly maintained, their crew are inexperienced, and morale is terrible. Thus far, the ships maneuver clumsily, respond slowly to orders, and their navigators do not seem to understand left from right. It does not help that this task force commander is, even for a Kristang, a major hard-ass. It almost makes me feel sympathetic for the crews under his command.
Yeah, I said with a frown. Almost. At the 18-hour, 32-minute mark, I was once more in my office when Skippy called. Sleep, although a good idea, had been elusive. I'd laid down on my bed and tried to get some rest for an hour, until I gave up and realized there was no way I could peacefully slumber while the landing party, while my people, were running out of oxygen. So I'd gone to my office to study flight training manuals.
Joe, one of those cruisers just jumped into low orbit of that moon on the opposite side from the Elder Base. We didn't have any warning. It was suddenly there. 4 dropships are proceeding down to the surface.
I fairly jumped around the desk and into the corridor.
Did you inform the bridge?
Yes, of course I did, Joe.
Major Sims is the current duty officer.
From my office to the bridge was less than 20 seconds. That's why I'd selected a tiny closet as my office. Close enough so I could get there quickly, far enough away and around a corner so the bridge and CIC crews didn't feel I was hovering over their shoulders every minute. When I got there, Sims was already sliding out of the command chair for me.
All we know is a cruiser jumped in with no warning and launched 4 dropships straight down. On their current course and speed, we estimate they will arrive at the Elder Base in 27 minutes.
27 minutes. Because the Dutchman could jump there within seconds, we didn't need to act immediately. We could evaluate the situation and consider our options.
I was about to order Captain Desai to the bridge. I wanted our most experienced pilot at the controls if we had to go into combat. Then I remembered Desai wasn't aboard the ship. She was in a dropship in stealth on that moon. This situation was bad. All bad.
Is there any sign that the Kristang know about the landing party? I asked the obvious question. Why else would that cruiser have jumped into orbit there and launched four dropships?
No, Skippy answered. There were no such communications before that cruiser jumped, and the cruiser and its four dropships are maintaining communications silence. It is, however, impossible for us to assure that we can monitor every single transmission between those ships. If they are using a tight beam maser to communicate between ships, the Dutchman's sensors have less than a 50% chance to intercept the message from here.
I'm going to assume they know. Somehow they know about the landing party. It's the only thing that makes sense.
Our options are what? We jump in, launch missiles at that cruiser, and hit those dropships with a maser cannon. I pondered the main display, playing with the controls on the arm of the command chair. I'd gotten pretty good at manipulating the display. From our position, we had line of sight to the moon. The orbits of the moon and the Dutchman meant the moon was going behind the planet within 40 minutes. The cruiser was a dot on the display. It was visible, but was headed behind the moon in less than 5 minutes. Because we weren't using the Dutchman's sensor field, we had to rely on passive sensors to detect the enemy ships. Most importantly, four of the dots on the display were the Kristang dropships. I zoomed in the view, and it revealed two large troop transports and two gunships. The dropships had pulled out of their steep dive from orbit and were flying low, hugging the airless terrain. An icon on the display indicated that the ship's sensors were estimating the position of the dropships. At such distance, and with our sensors dealing with interference from the planet's magnetic field, detecting the dropships was intermittent.
Oh, hey, how close to the moon's surface can we jump in? We need to shrink the distance Desai needs to get back aboard. Star carriers aren't designed to operate in a gravity well. That moon's gravity can't be a problem, right? Can we...
Colonel Joe, Skippy interrupted me. We have another option that you should strongly consider. Doing nothing for now, and waiting. I don't think this is a real assault against the landing party. If they knew humans are down there, their other ships would be deployed to support the assault force. They are not at the moment. The other ships are operating independently.
You think this is an exercise also?
That surprised me. It also didn't make much sense. The planet had a dozen moons. Having a Kristang cruiser jump into orbit of the one moon where we had a landing party stranded was too much of a coincidence.
Yes, I believe it is another exercise. Based on limited data, yes, Skippy said confidently.
This appears to be one Kristang ship practicing an assault drop.
How sure are you about that, Skippy?
I needed him to be very confident. If the Kristang dropships landed at the Elder Site and their soldiers went inside, it would not matter whether their original purpose was an exercise or an assault. They were likely to find our landing party, and then there would certainly be a fight for real.
Fairly.
Perhaps that did not give the impression I intended to convey. To be more accurate, there is a 92% probability that this is an exercise and that the Kristang do not know anything about the presence of our landing party. I can show you, if you like, how a Kristang task force would deploy to support an assault drop. This task force is not positioned to assist that one cruiser. Also, those four dropships have not engaged stealth. That is also unusual. The lack of stealth is a strong indicator that this is not a true combat situation for the Kristang. If their intention is to attack our landing party, the tactics of that task force are truly incompetent.
92% is good, Skippy, except it only tells me part of what I need to know. If part of the exercise includes those dropships landing at the Elder Site and Kristang soldiers going into the Elder Site, we will need to intervene.
Oh, Skippy sounded disappointed.
I hadn't considered that. We could be forced into combat, even if that is not currently the intention of the Kristang.
Also, those other ships are several light minutes away. Our information on their positions and what they are doing is out of date by that much, I pointed out.
That was a problem with our fancy displays. They made you unconsciously assume the data was all in real time, and it wasn't. In space combat, almost everything had a time lag of at least several seconds. When I was in Army basic training, we had to use old-fashioned paper maps in addition to computer displays, tablets, and GPS equipment.
Paper maps made you realize the whole time that a marker showing us an enemy's position was only as good as how old that data was. We could use some of that mindset out here now.
True, and it is mildly impressive that a monkey like you is capable of such thinking, Skippy said grudgingly.
Well then, in that case, I will concede that this may turn into a fight if those dropships arrive at the Elder Base. Until such time, I believe our best course of action is to wait to determine what the Kristang are doing.
Waiting won't limit our options? I asked with a frown.
That ship is going behind the moon, and our maser cannons require line of sight to hit the dropships.
Waiting will not substantially decrease our chance of success at rescuing the landing party, Joe, because the odds are very much not at all good for us. Our best chance to recover the landing party, I am trying to tell you, is to wait and hope this is an exercise. There is little downside to delaying action for up to another 20, even 22 minutes. If we are forced to act, delaying will only decrease our chances of success by 0.17%. Overall, our chances of retrieving the landing party in combat against this Kristang force are... Ah, you hate math anyway, so I won't quote numbers at you. The odds against us suck, Joe. The landing party is simply too vulnerable down there, and this ship is not capable of providing enough firepower to shield them.
We wait?
Yes, that is my recommendation.
I slumped slightly in the chair.
Waiting is something I'm not good at, Skippy. Joe, if I listed all the things you are not good at, we would be here a very long time. I do agree that waiting is something you particularly suck at. If you were a superhero, you would be no patience man. You'd be the guy who thinks if the instructions say to bake a cake at 300 degrees for 30 minutes, you can instead bake it at 1800 degrees for 5 minutes.
You can't? I managed a hint of a smile at that.
That would be a solid no, Joe.
Remind me to keep you away from the galley.
We waited. We waited, and we made plans. We hastily threw together plans to attack the Kristang and recover the landing party. We waited another 5 minutes, then 10. At the 12-minute mark, Skippy announced the four dropships had split up into two groups of two, with a gunship and a troop transport in each group. They had split up. Their apparent courses were taking them to approach the Elder Base from two directions.
"It now appears very likely," Skippy said sadly, "that they intend to land and practice a full combat assault on the Elder Base. This is very unfortunate. I still believe the Kristang do not know anything about our landing party. The Elder Base is merely a convenient place to practice an assault.
As you said, that hardly matters now."
"It doesn't matter. If we have to fight, I want to do it when we choose, not wait for them to force our hand. I am not letting those dropships get close enough to that Elder site to threaten our people down there. Major Sims, get the Ready Bird warmed up." We had two pilots and a dropship prepared to launch on a 2-minute notice. "Skippy, show us our best options again. As none of our options are good, not one of them could be considered best, Joe. But the option you liked best is..."
"Wait, I'm intercepting a message from the cruiser."
"Yep. I was right. This is an exercise. The captain of the cruiser is bragging about how well the exercise is going, and he is requesting permission for the dropships to engage stealth for the final approach to the Elder Site. The task force commander apparently denied use of stealth so far because he didn't trust the dropship pilots not to crash into each other if they can't see each other. It will take several minutes, of course, to receive a reply from the task force."
"Let's use that time wisely, then. I don't want those dropships to be stealthed when we have to target them. We're going with option Bravo," I ordered.
"Pilot, orient the ship and bring us about. Accelerate to match speed with target. Major Sims, tell the Ready Bird to open the bay doors and prepare to launch."
Option Bravo was the least bad of our bad options, in my inexperienced opinion. We were going to accelerate the Dutchman out of the planet's magnetic field to match course and speed with the moon. At the last minute, we would turn the ship so it would be sticking straight up and down in relation to the Elder Base. Straight up and down with the engines pointing down, so that when we emerged from jump, the Dutchman would be falling in the moon's gravity well rear end first. Our plan was to launch the Ready Bird as soon as we came out of the jump wormhole and send a signal to Desai. Hopefully, Desai would get our signal and climb up to rendezvous with the Dutchman while our pilots tried to balance our massive, awkward ship on its tail.
According to Skippy, our star carrier didn't have enough thrust available to maintain altitude, or it did have enough thrust, but we couldn't use it in a gravity well without snapping the ship's long spine. So, the ship would be falling, tail first, toward the surface of the moon, and Desai would need to precisely match our speed and acceleration and fly her dropship into a landing bay. While she was flying up to us, we would be hitting the four Kristang dropships with maser cannons, and the Ready Bird would be flying down to hopefully recover Chang's landing party. There would not be enough time to recover the Ready Bird before the Dutchman had to jump away. We could only fall a certain distance before we had to jump away or crash. When we jumped, the plan called for us to engage the Kristang cruiser with missiles, then jump away again. The Ready Bird would need to recover Chang's landing party, fly some distance away from the Elder Site, engage stealth, and wait. Wait for possibly a long time, because even if we got lucky and knocked out that cruiser, the rest of the Kristang Task Force and their friends, now just outside the star system, would be buzzing around the moon like angry hornets. It was not a good plan. It was the only plan we could think of in the short time available. It would have to do. I was not leaving the landing party down there. It may sound heartless, but if we couldn't recover the landing party from the Elder structure they'd taken shelter in, I would have to order a missile strike on them to hide the fact that humans were out here.
"Whatever happens, Joe, this will be a first in galactic history," Skippy announced. "No one has ever done this type of maneuver with a star carrier."
"Something to look forward to, then."
"No one has done this because this is mind-bogglingly stupid."
"Hey, Skippy."
"Yeah?"
"Hold my beer. Watch this."
"What? Hold your... Damn it! Whoever put a redneck in command of a starship?"
"You did."
"Oh." He thought about that for a moment. "Damn, I guess I did."
The time for joking around with Skippy was over. Grimly, I took one last look at the main display and ordered, "Pilot, initiate jump countdown. Major Sims, don't wait for a signal from me. Your team is weapons free. Take out those dropships quick. They'll go into stealth mode if we miss with the first shot." There were four enemy dropships racing low and fast, barely above the moon's surface, and the Flying Dutchman had only two rear-facing maser cannons. We had to make every shot count.
"Aye, aye, sir," Sims acknowledged.
I saw the pilot press the button to initiate the program jump, and she counted down. "Jump in 10, 9. In a few seconds, I was going to take a new, untested crew and a ship never designed to engage in direct combat into desperate combat. Everyone aboard the ship could die, and it would be my fault, entirely my fault. My right hand was shaking so badly that I put it in my lap and squeezed it with my left hand, which was not much better. And I needed to pee again. Waiting for combat to begin, the anticipation of danger was almost worse than combat itself. Once the shooting starts, my mind attains clarity and focus. Before the shooting starts, my mind raced over every horrible possibility of things going sideways.
4, 3,
belay that, Skippy shouted, and I saw on the display that he'd canceled the jump on his own. Also, he'd cut power to the engines. We were no longer accelerating.
Skippy, what the hell?
Battlecruiser just jumped in near the Elder Site. They are targeting the four dropships with low-power masers. This must be another part of the exercise.
Oh! Two destroyers just jumped in near the cruiser on the far side of the moon. They are engaged in a mock battle.
Joe, trust me on this. Those four dropships have been declared dead by the task force manager. They have changed course and are climbing for orbit. They are no longer proceeding toward the Elder Site.
Oh, thank God. I let out a long breath and slumped in the chair.
Pilot, bring us back into the magnetic field gently, please. We don't want to be seen.
Wow, Skippy grunted.
What is it? I asked fearfully. Right then, I didn't think I could take any more bad news.
Oh, nothing that affects us directly, Joe.
Man, the mock battle between that cruiser and those two destroyers is not going well for either side. All three ships are shockingly clumsy.
The task force manager is pissed. He is bitching at them in the clear, not bothering to encrypt the transmission. I think he wants the rest of the task force to hear, to embarrass those three ship captains in front of their peers.
Clumsy, huh? You, think they're clumsy enough that we could take them in a fight if we had to?
Skippy laughed. No way, dude.
Damn. When I say clumsy, I mean clumsy by the standards of a hateful warrior species like the Krestang, Joe. The Dutchman is a big, long, spindly monstrosity that would handle like a drunken pig, even if I were flying it. And our ship is flown by unskilled monkeys. No offense to your pilots, but the Theranin designed this ship to be controlled by cyborg implants. Using the manual controls on this backup bridge